question here. I'll just ask it so everyone here, actually. I love that idea that you have on the, you know, spreading the envelope. And obviously, it's been used, in a sense, in totalitarian systems like China. Okay, because everybody's watching everybody else. But here's my other idea, which is you should be using perhaps maybe a training program for, and by the way, I'm native U.S. citizen, so you guys are real patriots, all right? You should actually be using children, because children are suspicious of a lot of things. And if they're trained properly, they can watch and then see if there's something bad is happening. Is that, what do you think of that possibility? I mean, now that could be a bit big problem.
Well, I'll tell you what's happening in Iraq. What's happening in Iraq is that the teenagers are turning out to be our best friends. And the teenagers are both have open minds and are more recognizing. I don't want to recruit children. I want to educate children. I believe that intelligence should be taught in every classroom, beginning with middle school. I think we should have national intelligence honor societies. And I think people should be rewarded for setting up a zip code issue coverage network for anything. I don't care if you want to track West Nile disease in your neighborhood or if you want to examine how many of your neighbors have gone into... I don't... This is not a police program. This is about neighborhood watch at a level of sophistication that the internet now makes possible. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I have a comment and then a spy question. Are you familiar with the FBI's InfraGuard program and the efforts they've made at open source intelligence and dissemination?
You're not talking about the library thing.
No, it's a public-private partnership the FBI put together with. The focus is corporate America, which kind of makes it...
Well, they have
hackers.
A number to call.
No, they actually have a program where you get involved. You have quarterly meetings. If you get, you know, one of the problems is they still bring a lot of the government bureaucracy with them. So in order to get a lot of the closed source intelligence, you have to get cleared, get a background check, all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of training and intel that they send out on a daily and weekly basis.
Well, I'm vaguely familiar with some of these things that FBI has done, but what I really want to emphasize is security in the neighborhood is a bottom-up seven-tribe process. And I like to think of the FBI as a trawler, a federal trawler. You do not catch terrorists by having a federal trawler crisscrossing America. You catch terrorists by teaching the local police how to fish. And that's why Brent Scowcroft paid serious attention to my one-page memo on reforming intelligence before he gave up on this administration, and he asked me to expand on the Homeland Security thing. And what I had proposed, it was very sensible, was $30 million per state, $1.5 billion total, for the creation of a generic state intelligence center with 15 five-man watch teams. That was not hardwired for counterterrorism. The mistake we're making across America is we're trying to hardwire a few privileged people into a cement bunker with CIA-approved communications and FBI-approved communications, and it's absolutely useless for natural disasters or crime waves or plagues emerging. We can now spot an epidemic in an illegal immigrant community between 4 days and 4 weeks in advance. Of previously stuffed by tracking the over the grocery counter prescriptions and the specific combinations. So on balance, I think the FBI needs to be a team player and it will never be the leader.
Yeah, I would encourage you to look into the program because it actually does a bottom-up approach. But here's my spy question.
Okay.
Are you familiar with the book Charlie Wilson's War?
Yeah.
Okay. In there was criticism, particularly of a lot of the purges that took place. And it sounds like you were there in the same time frame. And I wonder if you would like to address either stories around that particular book or the author's commentary on the ethnic purges that happened.
Well, the author was drawing heavily on Gus's experience. I think Stansfield Turner began the process of destroying the American intelligence community, but because of his naval flag fascination with technical solutions. I've said that one of the biggest mistakes we've made in American intelligence is substituted technology for thinking. Stansfield Turner was also, and I have to tell you, I'm a naval officer, but Marines see things differently, and sometimes we think of a certain category of Navy officer as prissy white mice. And Stansfield Turner had a prissy disaffection for clandestine intelligence. He's one of these guys that thinks it's cleaner to do it with technology. And so he gutted us. He gutted the clandestine service. And then we had a series of mediocrities. The only one that was any good, really, was Dick Helms, whose book is worth reading, or my summary of his book. I think I've forgotten your question. Yeah, well, it was. You know, it's not so much a purge as really bad management. American intelligence has never, with the possible exception of Dick Helms, but even Dick had his problems, American intelligence has never been managed professionally. And General Odom makes this point in his book, Fixing Intelligence. He points out that DCIs generally come from a political background or a staff suck-up background or a single discipline background. And as a result, they don't have the diverse... I'm one of the very few officers I know who served in three of the four directorates at CIA, who's done SIGINT, who's done IMINT, who stood up a Marine Corps or Defense Intelligence Center, and then gone on to be a guru for open source intelligence. I don't know anybody quite like me in terms of that diversity of experience. And if I were advising a DCI, I would say to him, you really do need to ensure that you understand all of the problems here. I mean, take Mike Hayden as an example, the director of NSA. I think he's a particularly gifted officer. He can't fix NSA. I mean, from day one, Barbara McNamara and others were fighting him. Hayden and Black listened to me when I said I thought NSA should become a national processing agency, and it should begin by having a pilot project that does OSINT for all of the world on terrorism, and that then sets the foundation for deciding how to surge your assets and where to emphasize and so forth. He actually got me in front of every single general and colonel in the collection division, and they all heard out my brief, and at the end of it, they say, well, you know, geez, that's really nice, but we do SIGINT. And Hayden is on record as saying that every time he wants to terminate a program, the only guy that knows all the details is the guy that would lose his job if he terminated the program. Okay, because of compartmentation. So the system is desperately broken. It's less about purging and more about bad management. I mean, I've written two books on this subject. I'm working on a third. There have been at least another 15 to 20 books. I've published a list of top 20 intelligence books, and you don't have to buy and read all the books. You can just read my summaries if you're willing to accept me as a point of departure. Yes, sir.
I wanted to thank you for actually coming out here today.
Oh, I like this.
This has been an amazing experience. And I wanted to see if you can shed some light on something that is kind of like personal, I guess, in a sense, which is my family and I, we actually came out of Cuba, and we made it here in the 1960s.
The only three countries that speak proper Spanish are Cuba, Colombia, and Spain.
Yeah. But no es verdad. The thing that I had is, I mean, you know, I made it here to the United States when I was 6 years old. You know, our family came over on a program, I guess, that the United States had called the Freedom Flights. And it was like at the height of the Cold War. And we've made it as a family from starting literally from zero. You know, we didn't have a pasta pit in and all that, piss in and that kind of thing. And it's always, I've always wondered, what the hell is it about Cuba exactly that has put us as a nation into being, you know, what we are to the world, which is I still don't understand it at the age of 40.
It comes back to mindset it comes back to mindset. You know, we actually started the Cold War. I mean, if you look at Jim Fanford's book on Puzzle Palace and stuff, when the Soviet Union was defenseless after World War II, we were running bomber flights deep into the Soviet Union over the Arctic Circle just to see how far we could get before they noticed. How stupid is that? And so we basically pushed the Soviets to invest heavily in the military. We've also been so obsessively concerned about communism that we accepted fascism in the United States as a trade-off. I mean, we imported the Nazi rocket scientists and others. And if you look at Karl Rove, he is a direct descendant of Nazi war criminals. Okay? His father changed his name. But the fact is, Rove is in a direct path back to Nazism. And so we allowed Nazis to influence U.S. policy against communism and to make the U.S. much harder against communism. We basically built a communist boogeyman. And the Vietnam War and this whole issue of dominoes turned out to be wrong. Now, I rarely review DVDs on Amazon, but I just reviewed Robert McNamara's DVD, and I summarized his 11 lessons. And, you know, I think McNamara and Colby are two of the people who grew the most after leaving office. And there's a lot to be said there. Communism is not a threat. And we should be emphasizing making legal, legitimate democracy. Part of the problem with America is it's bought off. Let's take Sudan as an example. Sudan is a hotbed of terrorism. It's also got a major genocide going on. But because the Sudanese government pretends to be supporting the global war on terrorism, we're letting them get away with mass murder, as well as active terrorism in their own borders. And so we're really living a lie. We're living a lie at multiple levels. I said in one of my press releases the other day, we're in a 100-year war, six fronts. I don't think I completed them all, but the Middle East was obviously one. India, Pakistan, Kashmir, all of that. We slept through the first quarter. We're lying our way through the second quarter. We are going to be hurt bad in the third quarter. And whether we win this game or not in the fourth quarter depends a lot on how soon we can recover one man, one vote. Sir.
Thank you for the talk. Pure spy question. Which country has the best intelligence service? Your ranking, top three countries.
None of them has the best intelligence service. The question was, which country has the best intelligence service? I think every country has its strengths and its shortcomings. The United States, for example, is quite good at spending massive amounts of money thoughtlessly. And in fact, when I lecture my British and Australian colleagues, I say, you know, we're really treating this alliance wrong. What it ought to be is Australian languages, American money, British brains, and the Canadian reputation for helplessness. You know, that's an alliance that works. And the South Africans right now are about to build a new OSINT center, and they've learned not to take computers from Americans. Okay? They figured that one out. I said, just take the cash. But we're good at spending money. We're not good at anything else. The Israelis, I think, are good at very specific kinds of operations. They're also good at using reservists for open source intelligence collection. The Swedes used to be very good at open source intelligence. My partner, Mats Bajor, got an award from the King of Sweden for this. Scotland Yard in London, the Queen of England just gave out an Order of the British Empire to my friend Detective Steve Edwards, who created the OSINT unit at Scotland Yard that is putting people in jail, big people, terrorists and major corporate criminals, using OSINT to create these networks and link analysis. And Interpol is sending questions to Scotland Yard, and inside of hours, he is providing exactly which corporate boards people are connected to, and he's identifying people that are doing major league arms smuggling and so forth. I think the Indians are very good in some select areas. I think the French are very good at counterintelligence against Arabs. The South Africans are very good at clandestine intelligence, black on black. In fact, after the revolution, the South Africans, the best blacks, went into intelligence. And all of the whites are in the process of training them as they're flipping. And they also had the benefit that just before the revolution, there was an entire new intelligence campus built for South Africa, but they're still only at 19 baud for their internet connection. That breaks my heart. So I don't think there is any intelligence community that has all the pieces lined up. You remember my little slide? You had collection, counterintelligence, covert action, analysis, and leadership. There is no one community that I know of that's got it all together.
You could say relatively to their country.
What's that?
You could say in relation to their country, which intelligence service serves their country best?
That's a hard question. I'd have to think about that, because one of the things you really have to consider is what is the cost to a country of intelligence operations that are counterproductive or cost a lot of money. I think every intelligence services has some good and some bad. Why don't you tell me what your answer is, and then we'll take it from there.
I don't really know. I know Israeli service has always been very good for Israel.
It's good in narrow. It's good in narrowcasting.
But it also has started to fail lately.
Yes, it has. And in fact, I think one of the problems with the U.S. not reading Hebrew is that we don't see the internal opposition. There's a very famous article that was written by an Israeli general about a year ago that basically said that the Israeli policy against Palestine was out of touch with reality, was based on false intelligence, was political manipulation. It does not help to assassinate or capture single individuals if you're bulldozing entire villages at the same time. And it's also not helpful if you're stealing the water from the entire Middle East to support an agriculture sector that is producing 3% of your GDP. This is just flat out stupid, okay? No disrespect intended. It's just a statement of fact. And so one of the things I'm struggling with whether I redirect my third book. My third book was originally intended to focus only on the $500 billion for national security. I'm now toying with the idea of saying that we need a new domestic intelligence agency that uses only open sources and methods to understand the most pressing domestic problems. For instance, in America, we have a very pressing domestic problem with the working poor. That should be an oxymoron, but it's not. I mean, the working poor is the title of a book, and it's a very delicate cycle. I mean, if your child care breaks down, or the bus doesn't show up, or your alarm clock doesn't go off, or you have a major injury in your family, your entire life is destroyed, and you drop below the poverty line. Okay, I think we need to have intelligence about our own domestic situation. So, for example, in the Israeli case, I would say, fellas, we need to think about importing food and not using so much water. We need to think about asking for an international demilitarized zone and actually creating a multi-billion dollar fund to basically raise two generations in peace with a 30-year commitment for this international force staying. There are a whole bunch of other things, but the bottom line is I think most countries do not have a grand strategy. They do not have an interagency coordination process. They do not have holistic intelligence covering both domestic and international issues in a coherent, sensible way. For example, our foreign aid investments in Africa are trivial compared to how we screw the Africans with our tariffs and other anti-trade initiatives. So by and large, I would say to you, I think most countries are unintelligence, and right now intelligence is part of the problem. National intelligence is part of the problem rather than part of the solution. Okay, next.
Sorry, may I have one question? With open source intelligence, if you collect intelligence from various people, who do you intend would be the sink for this intelligence? Would it be a select few?
No.
Or would it also be the entire communities?
Open source intelligence is a come as you are mix and match network.
What would that sometimes plant panic for the entire society? If somebody reports a terrorist in Kansas.
If he's associated with hope, we'll take it accordingly. The point is this is a self-healing system. Okay, it's a bottom-up self-healing network. Self-evaluating, self-policing. This is not a command and control solution. I want to jump start it with $125 million a year in government money, but then I want to rapidly expand that to a $1.5 billion a year global network where corporations, NGOs, businesses, universities, newspapers all have a vested interest in optimizing the amount of information that can be shared. And then that sharing is processed in different ways. Okay, next person. Are we doing all right here in the back?
Okay. It seems that a lot of countries use their intelligence apparatus to kind of aid local companies, the country or the companies in that country,
right,
in industrial espionage. How What are some of the more egregious offenders? I know it's alleged.
France, Germany, Israel, okay. Followed by China and Russia.
How egregious is the United States? How well do we help our industries maintain thought?
Not well at all. One of the problems that we have is that most of our officers are focused on hard targets, on foreign liaison, and they don't have economics degrees. We don't do well at economic intelligence, as best I can tell. I haven't had privileged access at CIA since 1988, but the State Department is having the same problem. It used to be that the State Department ideal officer was what was called a pole mill officer. He was politically astute and able to deal with the U.S. military. What we're finding that the State Department needs today is people who have a deep understanding of both indigenous history and culture and macroeconomics. And so we're talking about a Paul Econ officer. So I think as globalization spreads, one of the things we haven't done, you know, there's books about why people hate America and all of this. We haven't done a proper analysis. I think in terms of political, legal, military, socioeconomic, ideocultural, technodemographic, and natural geographic. We haven't done a strategic analysis of the state of the world and the U.S. budget and what needs to change over the next 6 years in order to increase legitimate governments, stabilize unstable failed states, end crime, end disease, end poverty, end hunger, dramatically reduce small arms. Part of the problem is we're corrupt. We are the major manufacturer and distributor of small arms in the hands of children around the world. We are the major manufacturer and distributor of nuclear materials. In fact, the last proper inventory of plutonium and stuff was done in 1996 by David Albright out of Washington. There's more plutonium available in U.S. military installations for theft, and we have no idea where all our stuff is.
Actually, from the other side of that, you were mentioning earlier, you said that when you were assembling your intelligence assessment, you went to like these six CEOs and kind of twisted their arms. How can businesses better work with the government to try to take some of the burden off of them? I mean, what role do you see them taking percentage-wise in the amount of information?
Yeah, that's a very, very helpful question. First off, there's something called the Society of Competitive Intelligence Professionals, which is at about the fourth grade level. And I think most businesses today don't do business intelligence. First off, we did an analysis of our competition and found out that our competition was more often than not an ignorant middle manager that thought he knew it all and didn't need business intelligence and didn't want to spend money on buying information, especially tailored information. Our next biggest competitor are things like the Internet and Factiva and other so-called easy, quick solutions that just give you a tiny thing. We're also finding most published information is not really valuable. You actually have to go out and collect exactly what you need, when you need it, in relation to the very specific context that you're operating in. What I would do if I were a business is I would make it a point to treat business intelligence as a specialization with direct access to the CEO. And I would evaluate, I'd add it to every fitness report, every performance evaluation. Employee description number one would be collect and utilize business intelligence. And then you start developing an internal program to create what are called smart organizations. If I were a business with interest in the Middle East, I would make it a point to do a citation analysis on the Middle East and then to systematically start identifying who the top government people are, not only in the U.S. government, but in the Australian government and other governments. And I would work very hard to create one of these OSINT meetup virtual networks with the 8-point star for my shared interest. And I would use information rather than money as wampum. Okay?
I have a spy question for
you. Good.
Say you had to disappear tomorrow. How would you do it?
With a lot of prior planning. I miss the guy that did 10 years of practical anonymity. That was an interesting topic to me. I have not invested in disappearing, in part because I have three children, and America is a make-or-break situation for me. But if I were disappearing, I would certainly eliminate all use of electronic devices and all use of credit cards, and I would go strictly cash. and work for food.
Good morning.
And by the way, hang on a second. Where is that guy? How would you do it? Huh? Yeah. How would you do it? Well, in my experience, disappearing takes a lot of work. I actually love one of John le Carré's books was very interesting. This guy had two different identities. One was his weekend identity and one was his weekday identity. And he would move between two different spots, which had completely separate identities so that he could flush any time in either direction. I'm looking forward to The Bourne Supremacy, by the way. I mean, you know, these movies are wonderful about real spying. Go on.
Good morning.
Hey, Render.
Congratulations to all of you for staying around this late. So, big hand for all of you.
Yeah, I'm going to ask for the old guy's schedule next year. Same day, open at 10 and start at 8.
First, quick question. Who scheduled you for first thing in the morning after all the drinking starts? I unfortunately had to miss your talk yesterday morning.
You can get the OSINT story on my website. You know, they're trying to open at a conventional hour.
Conventional for who?
Well, that's true. I mean, you know, what I would do is have them replay my tapes at night someplace. But really, in your case, particularly since we know each other, I would say go to my website and read the OSINT story.
That's what I spend my days doing at work when I should be doing real work.
So. Okay, good. Yeah, I think people, let me tell you, CIA, my wife still works there. First thing I'm going to do with CIA, if I ever have the chance, is shut down the gossip networks. There is a users group on everything, including defecating lizards. And CIA employees spend at least a third of their time doing gossip about sleep apnea, whatever. It's absolutely amazing the amount of lost productivity. Between Bill Gates and gossip, I think we're about 25% productive in most of America.
To my real question here, you keep talking about global brain, you know, everybody contributing things. You know, they find some vulnerability or some intelligence useful to the community that you post it and share it with everyone else. We're not at that point yet. I've found myself in a situation a couple of times with my war driving data that I find an access point that is blatantly in a government installation or some place you just should not have an open access point.
Right.
One particular one was a provincial prison.
Step one is tell the government, and step two is tell the newspaper.
The problem is who? And without getting myself arrested is the other half of it. Because if you found an open access point in a prison, I don't want to end up on the other side of that wall.
No, I mean, I think you can do very well with anonymous postal mail, especially if you mail it to someone else and they mail it from another city. But I think we have a responsibility to report things like this. And I just had the same question or a similar question from someone in San Diego. And I said, you tell the government, and then you tell the government that if they ignore you, you're going to tell the newspaper.
Yeah, I was about to ask that. How effective is it going to the media? Is this going to change their minds, or are they just going to clamp up?
The government is scared of the media. And also, I would info your congressman if you want to be
Canadian,
overt.
Remember?
Huh?
I'm Canadian, remember?
Oh, you're Canadian. I thought we'd revoked your passport. Okay.
They keep trying, but they're just so easy to copy.
Yeah. Now, you know, in 1994, I said the hackers ought to create a website at which they gave corporations and the government 30 days in which to fix known obvious flaws and access points. And at the end of 30 days, it was posted publicly. I still think that's useful. And in fact, 2600 could render a national service by providing a place where things like that can be reported and your identity concealed.
Well, one of them right now is a site called Wiggle, a wireless internet geographical logging engine where war drivers from all over the world submit their data, and anybody can go in and, well, for the states at least, punch in their zip code and see all the access points there and just check around their
building. Send me an email about that.
I will.
Yeah, that would be fun. Next question.
Hi, you mentioned that you used to work for the CIA. Yes, and your wife also works for the CIA now?
She still does.
What do you say about people that say that since you once worked for the CIA, you are always the CIA asset?
You know, I'm glad you asked that question. I'm going to go ahead and advance my conclusion. I was thinking about how to end my statement at 2 o'clock, but let me go ahead and give you my ending in relation to your question.
Well, before you start that, let me mention that I disagree with a lot of your analysis.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so? What's your point?
Well, I'm curious if you're a CIA asset.
Okay, well, let me give you my ending. I am.
Thank you.
I have spent the last 6 years taking pictures of every single one of you. And I have got, finally, I'm getting an award for this next week. I've got a digital database of every single one of you. There is a SWAT team downstairs. Eric has been arrested already. Guys, thank you. I would never have gotten my award without your help. And by the way, it took CIA 60 people to create all of my book reviews and the 20,000 pages on my website. And let me tell you, I didn't think they could do it. Okay. What? Yeah, there's a cash award. And now for my punchline, a la Wozniak, I'm just kidding. Look, you know what? I'll tell you what. I am what I am. And some of you have seen me for 6 years. And if you think I'm a CIA asset, then God bless you. Stay away from me. Yes, sir.
Start off with a spy question.
Yeah, good.
Based on popular movies or mainstream movies, what, in your opinion, is the most accurate
George
portrayal?
Smiley. All of the George Smiley books and movies.
And the most ridiculous movie?
Angel.
We
don't send kids into battle like that. I mean, really, Angel is the most ridiculous. Further follow-up?
Yeah. Another one. If you could run down the list of the seven tribes and the competency ratings that you give them.
Gladly. It's also in the free I don't know if it's in the free chapter of my book. Okay. National, 50%. Military, 40%, primarily because of targeting. Police, 20%. Business, 30%, but only because of the oil companies and the pharmaceuticals. Academy, 30%, only because of a few really good programs. NGOs, 10%. Media, 10%. Religions, 10 to 20% depending. B'nai B'rith gets really good points for following Arabs in certain neighborhoods. Opus Dei gets really good points for some of the stuff it does. The Mormons get points. But by and large, it all isn't as structured. And in fact, there's a great book on spying in the Vatican that changed my mind. Alan Dulles and I both used to think that the Pope was the most informed person on the earth. Turns out he's not. A lot of his priests are stupid, and his cardinals are very, very egotistical. And the Catholic hierarchy seems to be basically dominated by cardinals with clerks. But it's interesting.
Based on the ultimate ends of where you see the open source intelligence model going, where would that leave the traditional model of national intelligence if the open source intelligence evolved to where you would like to see it?
I can cut what we spend on national intelligence by a third and redirect that to public education.
Okay. And
all right, you got a
last
just,
question.
All right, real quick.
Is the based on civil liberties, where do you see ideally the divide or not a divide between national intelligence versus international intelligence and the wall between the two? Thanks for coming out.
Sure, my pleasure. Well, first off, I think we need a domestic intelligence agency that uses only open sources and methods to keep all of the departments of government honest. We're not getting a proper, honest public intelligence estimate, for example, on water scarcity in the United States. Second, I think the FBI will never be competent at anything other than interstate crime, and even there, barely so. I would like to see a new counterintelligence agency that has a business counterespionage division, a national trader counterintelligence division, and a domestic support counterterrorism division in which local law enforcement has the lead and the FBI is always in support. Not the FBI, but this new agency is always in support. The feds are not going to solve your problems. Yes, sir.
Thank you again for being here.
It's a pleasure.
This has been a real gem of this conference. I'll preface my question by saying that I've worked for a federal government research laboratory. I can personally attest to this sensation of being surrounded by people who mean very well and feeling like you're petrified by this calcified bureaucracy and, you know, drenched in this incompetent management, basically. So my question is, can you recommend any specifically non-military career paths that you think are aligned with this sort of progressive intelligence reform that you're talking about?
I'm tempted to say NASA. NASA's got some good things going on, but they also have the same bureaucratic problems. I don't really see any centers of excellence. I think we have to create them. In fact, one of the things I did while I was here in New York was have lunch with Jack Devine, who was the former head of the clandestine service and one of my old rabbis, and we were talking about business intelligence. And we've both come to the conclusion that tailored on-demand collection, translation, and intelligence production is about to get traction. I think broadcast news has killed itself. You know, I mean, if you watch Fox News, you deserve what you get. I really believe that in the next, remember, I've been laboring for 14 years on this. Senator Moynihan, great senator from the state of New York, wrote a book called Miles to Go, in which he says it takes 25 years to make changes. The political science literature says it takes 6 years to make changes in a corporate organization that wants to make the change. I think if you add secrecy and too much money to that, it takes it up to 18. And then if you add the federal government to that, it takes it out to 25. So we're more or less at the same number. It's going to be another 10 years, but what I think we're starting to see now is I've helped 40 governments worldwide create open source intelligence facilities and capabilities, mostly inside the military, some in law enforcement. My partner, Mats Pejor, is helping businesses worldwide improve their business intelligence. And what I see coming down the pike here in the next 5 years is an explosion in on-demand tailored intelligence using legal open sources and methods. So I'm very excited by this.
So barring any specific current agencies, then what sort of general paths would you say in terms of, from a career perspective,
would you recommend? It absolutely does not hurt you to join the U.S. military as a civilian or a uniformed person and learn the process of intelligence. For all of its flaws, it's a good starting point. And then migrate that out. And you should have a lot of fun with intelligencecareers.com. Just look at all of the jobs that are going begging right now. Get any one of them at intelligencecareers.com and think of it as a hack, you know? And, I mean, some guys came up to thank me for telling them in 1994 to get a haircut and learn how to wear a suit. Because these jobs can be had. I mean, you're not far. By the way, your T-shirt reminds me, I encouraged the U.S. government to send a bunch of people here in 1994, and I was particularly amused by the teams of the two-man teams with closely cropped hair, white T-shirts, shorts, and black Corafan shoes. That was Air Force intelligence at the time. I think they've improved since then. All right, sir, your question.
You'd mentioned a short while ago a need for a national traitor intelligence system. What's your take on the whole Valerie Plame outing, and who do you think did it?
I think Scooter Libby and Dick Cheney's office did it with Karl Rove's explicit approval and Dick Cheney's explicit concealment after the fact.
What are your feelings on it?
It has the potential to be Al Capone's tax return. It really does.
Do you think this will ever be? Where do you think the investigation will lead? Well, regardless of who's found to have done it.
Part of our problem is that the Republicans control both houses of Congress, and the moderate Republicans are being intimidated by the extremist Republicans, and the people haven't spoken. Right now, the people don't care about Valerie Plume's outing. Inasmuch as the vice president's office, in my humble opinion, very flagrantly and deliberately violated a national law, I'd like to see them brought to justice. I would like to see Dick Cheney brought to justice for sole sourcing billions of dollars to Halliburton. You know, these guys are bending or breaking every rule they can find. The outing of Valerie Plume, I think, is one of the things that George Tenet simply had to be honest about. And it led to his eventual resignation.
Wow.
But it's Al Capone's tax return, in my opinion.
Thank you, and thank you
for
coming.
My pleasure. I think Cheney's history. I think Rove decided that about 6 months ago. And now the only question is whether it's Giuliani or I don't think it'll be Colin Powell. It's Giuliani. I don't think it'll be McCain. I think Giuliani right now, in my opinion, is the front runner for a mindless ticket. What's that? Torture doesn't work. Torture is farm boy, schoolboy stuff. That prison was grossly mismanaged. Now, see, part of the problem with Iraq, I hate to say this, but I'm going to have to go to the bathroom again. See, I have a small gluttonous throat, and if I don't keep it constantly lubricated, it starts to collapse on itself and tickles, and then I start to choke. And so one of the aspects of my life that is constant is imbibing normally water, but lots of fluids. Now, where were we? Because I wanted to... Oh, torture. Look, Rumsfeld screwed the U.S. government. He screwed the American public. Because he... First off, Chalabi, I think, was an Iranian agent of influence. And the Iranians are laughing their heads off because they pulled off the best strategic deception in our history. They got six really ignorant people to believe Chalabi, who had already been fired by CIA as a thief and a liar. Okay? And Chalabi basically, when you're feeding false information, you feed what they want to hear. And so Chalabi fed these morons the hearts and flowers and flowers in the street and smiles and liberation, all that. So Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz were deceived into thinking that Iraq would be a cakewalk and that we could do it light with precision munitions and limited numbers of ground troops. The military professionals told them in no uncertain terms that we needed massive, there's actually a standard number for an occupation army. And make no mistake about it, this was an occupation army, but it wasn't created as an occupation army. It wasn't staffed up. So having gone in and beat the crap out of them, we were then left literally naked and empty. And so Rumsfeld then had to make up for that with a massive influx of reservists who are not trained, equipped, and organized to actually be an occupying army. We broke the social contract with the National Guard. I mean, the deal with the National Guard is weekends and 2 weeks and you know, once every 15 years you replace a body bag. But we broke the social contract with them. And so what Rumsfeld has done is put a whole bunch of untrained contractors and untrained reservists in place of the military professionals that, by the way, Clinton cut. Okay? The peace dividend actually gutted the Pentagon on the human side. And Rumsfeld, at the same time, did not fix the human shortfalls when he had his chance. He chose instead to spend $70 billion on weapon systems he still hasn't defined, plus another $7 billion on missile defense, which is a bullet hitting a bullet in the sky. Okay? It ain't going to happen. I mean, these guys are morons in practical, thoughtful terms, but they have some ideological worldviews that are just utterly amazing. And Chalabi literally sucked us into that war because the White House chose to turn off the diplomatic professionals, the intelligence professionals, even as ignorant as they were, the intelligence professionals had serious reservations about this. And the White House basically turned off the military, the diplomats, and the professionals. The media went on this witch hunt. Questioning the war was unpatriotic, and the stupid American public bought it, and Congress bought it. And a lot of us were trying to say, hey, wait a minute. You know, I mean, fully paid info ads. You look at my record on my website saying this is nuts. This is terrible. Anyway, torture doesn't work. They'll tell you what you want to hear. Yes, sir.
Hi. I'd like to ask, we've talked about the system, which we would use to catalog observations and items of intelligence from open sources. And I'd like to see if you could elaborate just a little more on what items of information we could tag each of those observations with, which would make the system useful, and in what ways we could search and index that data so that how would that be designed?
I don't have any of the final technical answers other than to say that at a minimum we should be doing XML RSS compliant stuff. It should have a date and time tag as well as a geospatial tag. It should have attributes for who collected it, who validated it for posting. If it's translated information, it should have a direct link back to the original. And I think over time this will work itself out. Okay. I'm going to have to stop and go to the bathroom, and I promise you three guys that it'll take no more than 5 minutes, and when I come back, I'll answer your questions. Can the staff handle the pins again? And then I'll be right back. Please don't take one if you've already taken one. Where's the national pins?